Yeah, so I'm moving lots of stuff.
Out of your house? Where are we going?
Within the house.
In the house, okay.
We're making room. There's a new baby coming. And so one of the rooms for the existing kid has to move into what used to be kind of like my study.
Yeah.
So we're taking, anyway, bottom line, I got to move all the books that used to be up there and disperse them throughout the house. Into the basement. Some are going in the garage, trying to get rid of some, you know, it's the whole process.
Much like a squirrel would, you know.
I'm not going to bury them. I'm just putting them, I'm moving the shelves and I'm putting them in different areas of the house, I guess.
I like it.
So I'm coming across lots of stuff. It's like, oh, that's cool. I forgot I had that book. I used to kind of know, oh, I have that book. If I go to a used bookstore, I'd be like, I don't need to buy that because I already have it. Anymore, I don't know how much of it is age. Some of it might just be little free libraries kind of throw me off. Because you can just take them and you kind of, it's not, you don't wrestle with the thought of, do I want to pay 10 bucks for this or whatever? You're just like, I'm taking that. And they kind of pile up. So I've found some doubles. Like, I didn't know I have one of these, and turns out I have two. So I'm running across that. But I wanted to ask you, I found I have a bunch of the mass market paperbacks.
You were, I had question about this. Are these from our times at the good old-fashioned Barnes & Noble?
Some are, and some just pile up.
So you just found
some. If I see a cool... I took a lot of those, too. The free ones with their covers off.
Yeah.
And...
Rips.
But
any,
like,
it's the correct term.
Strips. Yeah. The little lingo.
Oh. Well, inside baseball and the book business.
But also... I use bookstores, they're only a couple bucks, and if I see one that has a cool cover or something, I'll pick it up as well. So anyway, I got a bunch now. Maybe I have a problem. I don't know. Like a hoarding problem. Okay. Anyway. There's the trickiest type to maneuver to put on the shelf in an efficient or well organized way.
Funny you say that. I agree.
You know, they're the trickiest ones.
I have a method, but I don't know if it's
okay.
Okay.
Let me ask you mine and you tell me your method.
What's your method, man?
Well, I don't like it, but I think what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to double stack.
Ooh, okay.
Like spine, like vertical or horizontal, sorry. Horizontal, yeah. Spine out, like whole row and maybe, I don't know, 20, like taking up a whole shelf, push them to the back. And with the mass markets, there's room for another one, maybe two layers of mass markets the same way. It saves space, it looks efficient, but there's a row or two of stuff where you can't see what you have.
Yep.
So I'm reluctantly probably going to do that, at least for now, to get all the books off the floor. But I don't like it, but that's the method I'm going with. What are your thoughts, and what's your method?
My main thing with the mass markets is I go sideways, horizontal, which... It just is going vertical with mass markets. Just, I don't think it looks good, right?
Yeah.
So you go horizontal, and I've done the double. I have a bookcase in the guest bedroom that's just overflowing beyond. And I've done double sort of with larger size books where it's vertical and then side and then horizontal in front. But what I do is I stop about midway sometimes I don't midway. So you see the tops of the spines behind.
Okay. Oh.
So you have an idea of what's behind there, but you still are trying to maximize space. Right.
Okay.
But, it's not the best method because you do want to see what's behind there. Now I follow up question. The ones behind, in the back, are those ones, how to put this, are they the ones you kind of are less proud to show than the ones in the front? Because you want to show the ones that you're like, hey, look at this 1970s thriller I found. And then you have your Tom Clancy in the back.
Honestly,
no.
No
thought? Okay.
No, because I'm not ashamed of any of my books.
Come on now. There's not books that you put out in your library, in your, like, let's say your living room, You don't put your best stuff out there? You don't put the cream in the crop?
It actually, it starts that way. But at a certain point, it's just like, I got to get all this stuff put away. And it winds. This new crop of stuff that I'm moving is not even alphabetized. It's kind of just by sense. I have fiction and history. I've kind of sorted out by the genre, but I'm not even going to bother alphabetizing.
I don't alphabetize. My wife recently, I was telling you before we started recording, got some new bookcases for the attic where I record, and has taken all the books that I had in boxes and has put, and it's just great because I'm remembering books that I bought. I'm like, oh yeah, that book, I have that, you know. Looking right now, I just realized there's books in the kind of built-in bookcase up here. It's fantastic to see the books out of the boxes. So I don't know if I'm distracting Matt, I'm be like, hey, remember when we read 8 Men Now? Because I'm looking at that right now. But are we gonna maybe we do a book swap? Because my wife asked me to get rid of some more books.
Well,
now,
okay. If I kind of need to too, to mine, but we could kind of just
zero sum game. But then we get new books, so we get the rush of getting new books.
Yeah,
but then we also get credit for getting rid of books. So
good night
to Dada.
Good night. Good night, buddy.
A very touching moment right there. A very touching moment. It's a real. That's a real touching moment on the podcast.
That's so sweet.
So sweet.
Anyway, yeah, that would be fun.
You gotta tear up a little bit? You gonna get emotional?
No.
Are you just? Did he just say that so he didn't have to go to bed?
He's stalling.
Okay.
He's an expert staller.
No, yeah, the science behind or the art. I was gonna say artisanal. That's not what the artsy way of displaying books in a bookshelf is. Something I think about kind of a little bit. I'm not one of those ones who does the color. I've seen that.
No,
I don't really have any opinion. I probably, yeah, it's too much. I don't think I could remember what color the book
exactly
for is. Most of the genres sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you ever do this? Do you ever reorganize your books for the sake of having books? You get tired of looking at them next to the other books in your bookcase. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of redo the order, you're like, oh yeah, you kind of notice books that you kind of forgotten. I do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun to be kind of forced to, you know, to have a project you have to get done by a certain time. And it kind of forces you to move the whole thing. So it's kind of... It's been a neat, interesting process. I probably need to get rid of more than I'm gonna wind up getting rid of.
What's the number? What's the number you're shooting for?
Oh, I don't know.
100?
It's all by feel. No, I won't be getting rid of 100. If I have some strips in mass markets, I'll run them by you to see if you want them before I find.
Nah,
you
can't do that.
Rid of them. Are we allowed to put strips in free little libraries?
I don't see why not.
You're not supposed to resell them. It's the copyright stuff. That was one of the things when they let you take them. It's like you can't sell them. But can you put
them
in?
Might be a statute of limitations, too. These books are like 10 years old, probably.
They're old. But also, if you're, question for the audience, if you're a patron, I don't know what I call it. If you're walking by a free little library, are you like, oh, cool, free book without its cover? Or are you kind of like, don't put your trash in here? Like, would do you want to cover?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? How do you feel?
If I was running I've thought about this. Do you have to do like paperwork? Do you have to like log it within the, is there like some sort of database of like
free little libraries?
Tiny little free libraries?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Some of them are just cool looking old wooden thing. Yeah. Our neighbor, or lady on the corner of the street, she had a huge tree.
Yeah.
In her yard that the city cut down, but there's maybe a 10-foot high stump, and she carved out a hole into the stump, and the free little library is a tree stump.
Oh wow,
really cool.
We should do like a little photograph series on Instagram, taking pictures of the free libraries we come across.
So, can you do that, or is that an invasion of privacy?
Oh, that's
good. What's the free little library etiquette here?
Yeah, are there rules? Is there like a, you know, a code of conduct that you have to follow?
Because
I would say if I ran a free library, I would cull books that I viewed as not my taste. Like if someone takes a book and then puts one in, then I'm like, I don't want that in there.
Yeah, get out of here.
Because rarely, I'll be honest, and this is going to sound snooty, I'm rarely like, oh, that's an impressive group of books.
I found some good.
Is that snooty? That's snooty.
That's a little snooty, but you know, there are some, mostly they're like that. I found some good ones though. Actually, every now and then I'll find like a good, good selection. So I always keep my eye out. Anyway, I'm very curious about the etiquette on, especially the strips, the mass markets without a cover that bookstore employees are allowed to take sometimes. Would you, the listener, if you found one in Free Little Library, be excited, like, oh, score, I want this book, or would you just be offended, like, I don't want that?
I think most people would think, why doesn't this book have a cover?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's find out. Let us know how you feel about that. I'm curious. You run a Free Little Library, would you be upset? Would you, you know, wait at your window, looking through the Venetian blinds, waiting on whoever? Who's the guy who keeps putting these coverless books in my Free Little Library? And would you come out, if you saw him doing it, would you come out and squirt him with a water gun?
And on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and snootiness. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. Matt, we're in the midst of fall. This is fall, right?
September. Not technically, but it feels.
I don't like how the technical stuff, like summer doesn't start until the end of June. I don't like that. It's not summer.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think fall is basic. Fall starts September 1st.
We're doing a bit of a combo episode this week. We have a September book to pick. And then for our Patreons, we're going to be going through and nominating some thriller, legal thriller books to have our patrons vote on, and we'll select based on the voting over there. So we have a bunch of books that we're going to be nominating tonight, correct?
Correct. And let me just say, we're going to do the voting process and the episode where we vote and tally and then ultimately talk about the book, those two or three episodes, they will be on Patreon.
Yes.
We're just going to bring up a bunch of legal thrillers on this episode. And then if you're a patron, you get an equal vote and you decide what we're going to read.
Very fun process. We do a weighted voting system. So it's not like you just get one vote. And the patrons doesn't cost you that much to join, a few bucks every month. And you get that fun, exciting, task of picking a new book.
You get to be a part of something bigger than yourself.
We just did the Cabinet of Curiosities, and we kind of right now at the thriller corner, we pick kind of like a specific style of
a genre or
a genre, so to speak.
It's interesting. A lot. Did you notice? I found a lot of good legal thrillers, actually. I'm excited to nominate, but did you notice a lot of them kind of rub right up against whodunit / murder mysteries?
It's a little, yeah, you don't.
No, mine do.
There were some that I thought had, you know, whiffs of legal thriller, but it seemed like it was mostly something else. Yeah. Like even maybe an action or a, kind of maybe even political type thing. I think political and legal kind of are pretty close, and you could probably say they're probably connected. Yeah. I did some like, we have to kind of put this book forward type stuff, and also some under the radar type stuff.
Cool.
So
good.
And you for September, you said, you know, bring the hot stuff. I had this theme I was going to do that was going to be fun and kind of obscure books in a way. And then you said, you know, you got to bring the good stuff. So you put pressure on me, and I don't know if I appreciated that. So,
I have a thing I'm doing. You won't realize it till after, but we'll see. And I'll explain it, but I want to do it afterwards.
You're going to trick me? You're tricking me, right?
I'm not tricking you, no. It's not a trick, I promise. But you'll see what I'm doing. We'll see how soon you see what I'm doing, and I'll tell you afterwards.
I'm going to tell you what my theme was going to be that I kind of abandoned.
You abandoned it? Okay.
Kind of, yeah. Actually, I found a legal thriller doing this. I went through my Goodreads, okay? Mm-hmm. Went to read books. It's almost 1,000 books at this point. And I've been on Goodreads since, I think, 2012. I think you introduced it to me. And I went back around 10 years ago. And I went, because you can like sort by date added. And I wanted to see what I was interested in reading around 10 years, not to the day, but like sort of the month, season, sort of like that. And I had all these books that I'd, you know, honestly forgotten about. And I was going to nominate 3 or 4 of those. It's going to be a fun little thing. You know, I was going to tell you, hey, I wonder why I wanted to add this, that, whatever. But then you come and say, you know, like, bring strong nominations, not some obscure, book about Vietnam or something like that. So I banned it. That might be a later month that I do that.
That's a good idea. I could do the same thing too. That was good. I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, you ruined
it. Shouldn't have said anything. Well, no, because I just wanted you to bring some strong nomination. You usually do. You know what I mean? The Sun was your nomination, right? Sure. So was Burr. Like you it's. But sometimes there's weird months where you're just like, I only have one book and it's out of print, so we couldn't really read it if we tried.
That's not true.
I just want to be like, Peter.
That's not true.
Okay. I just wanted to be like, I want to make sure you brought it this month. So I shouldn't have said anything because that would have been fine.
I haven't done this in a while, but I'm going to read through what I think our current TBR is. Okay.
Right now? Okay. Yeah. We're going to keep going with this too. There's not going to be a point where we're like, it's too much. We have to halt. Like we add one every month. No,
who cares?
It's delusional, but we're just going to
keep going. Who cares? Yeah. I'm going to go. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
If I miss a book, please. I'm 75% sure this is everything we have on our TBR.
Okay.
We have Burr. We need to do part two, right? We have The Sun. We have A Question of Upbringing, which is book one of A Dance to the Music of Time. We have Flashman at the Charge. We have The King David Report. We have J. Bear Crow. We have Homo Deus. We have Shoeless Joe. We have Ball 4. We have The Master and Margarita. Life and Fate. And part two or part three of The Once and Future King. I also forgot that I created a Modern Library Top 100 project that I had. And that book is Ironweed by William Kennedy. Am I forgetting anything?
I think that's it.
That is 5, 6, 7, 8. That's 12 books. It's currently on our TBR. Let's add 13 and get ready for adding the 14th.
Get ready for 14.
Yeah. So.
Right.
People like TBRs. People like reading a lot of books.
People. And what I was thinking, bookish people do this all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have a stack of books you want to read and you get back from the bookstore and you just add more. So that's what.
Who stacks one book on their nightstand and be like, that's what I'm reading. And I won't. Of course, you get halfway through a book. You put 3 other books in their inspiration books. Maybe you're struggling through the book. And you're like, you know what? If I don't put some books that I maybe want to read more kind of over here, I'm not going to have the motivation to finish this book. Then I'm in a reading slump. Reading slumps. No one wants that. I would also like the listener to know that I am also reading side project books. So,
yeah, me too.
I think you're going to get mad at me when I tell you this. I've kind of committed to reading this new book by Paul Murray, who wrote Skippy Dies at the End. It is a long book. I don't really want to tell you the page number because I think you'll get upset. But halfway through,
are you committed to who?
I don't feel like I can abandon the book.
Okay, just you in your head. You didn't commit it to like you promised somebody you'd read the.
No,
you can. We just need to. You should talk about it.
It's called The Bee Sting by Paul Murray, and it's like 340 pages.
No, that's not bad. I think it's gonna be like 800.
Yeah,
but he's gonna say I'm reading Ducks Newburyport. On my
now, I'm trying to fit in what the book called What an Owl Knows. It's kind of interesting. I'm trying to, they're due in like 5 days at the library, but the library got rid of its late fees, so maybe I shouldn't be, you know, rushing so far. Question
about it.
If I turn in late, does that just mean I can't check out more books?
No, I think you're fine. Okay. Yes. No, there's no, if you hang on to it too long, you'll get charged the replacement fee. But they'll send you a letter and you can still
return. Have you ever had that happen?
I got a letter, yeah.
How long did you have the book over for?
Not too much. Like it's a couple weeks and then they just send it to you. And then I just forgot. I was like, oh crap, I better. It's like in the back of my car or something. Okay. So it was basically a courtesy thing. Okay. When I use it, it's nice not to have fees. But
do you want to start with the September nominations or the thriller nominations or books that you want to get the thriller out of the way? No?
Can you do the legal thrillers? We're not going to get out of the way. Let's just do it. Let's just talk about thrillers.
All right. I'm going to start with, I have two that are well known. If you look up lists of the best legal thrillers, these two books will probably be on it, or at least these two authors will probably be on it. I'm going to group them together, get them over with, and one twelfth. I kind of want to read both. I would be totally fine with reading either. I've never read either. So, but I don't think we don't want to get too, indie with this list or these nominations.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think I know who you're doing, and I have a couple too of that person, a Grisham, basically.
Yeah.
But we kind of made a point, we wanted more to choose from than just Grisham and Scott Turow or whoever else. But that doesn't mean I don't want to discourage Grisham, because that would be fine. That would be fun, and we can do it. I just wanted to have more options. So
I did The Pelican Brief and Presumed Innocent.
Scott Turow, Presumed Innocent.
Innocent by Scott Turow. The Pelican Brief is simply paced because I was listening to this podcast about the best movies in Denzel Washington, and he was in The Pelican Brief.
He was. Why did they say it was number one?
Was Denzel.
What the podcast say was the best Denzel movie?
Biggest Picture podcast. They just, you had five people, you had a draft Denzel Washington movies based on certain criteria. There was no real number one, so to speak.
Oh,
what's your favorite Denzel Washington movie?
Training Day.
I've never seen it.
Oh, that movie's so good, Peter. I'm not even mad. I'm excited to make you watch it. It's so good. Is my favorite Denzel movie.
I think that was picked, fairly early on, maybe even first.
Well, hey, I'm going to bug you to watch that.
I don't even know what my favorite Denzel. I really kind of want to watch these Equalizer movies. Anyway, we're getting off this track. Pelican Brief, Presumed Innocent, two heavyweights of the genre of legal.
Yeah.
So,
and if you guys want to, let's do them. We don't have to be. Do some obscure. It'd be
put
fun.
In the voting.
I'll just do my grid. I did A Time to Kill in The Firm.
Time to Kill.
Two different. I should say we're doing the broad scope here is a legal thriller, or it could be a courtroom drama. Because The Firm is more of a thriller. It's a lawyer who finds out the firm he works for is with the mob, and he's got to kind of go on the run. Like, so that's more thriller. A Time to Kill and some of the other nominations I have are courtroom dramas.
Yeah.
There's kind of a difference, but everything's under the umbrella of what they're doing. Both are eligible. So we got those two as well.
Okay. Both movies. Grisham, almost everything was made into a movie of his.
Especially that early stuff. Good movies too. His early Grisham's very solid.
Do you want me to go with my first sort of one that people probably don't know, but it is popular in a way.
Yeah.
And this is one I found. I added this to my TBR about 10 years ago. The book is called The Kalini Case by Ferdinand von Schrock. I believe it's a German translated by Athena Bell. Let's see here. From one of Europe's best-selling writers comes a spellbinding, utterly compelling courtroom drama, which will stay with you for a long time. Hold on right here. Author was born in Munich. He's one of Germany's most prominent defense lawyers in Berlin. I always liked that in a good thriller legal writer. Wasn't Grisham a lawyer?
Yep.
They came to writing after being a lawyer. Let me pull up. Yeah. Goodreads does not give a good synopsis of this.
I was going to say that last thing you read didn't say anything about the plot.
Hold on. I brought it to wrong.
No, not your fault. I just, yeah. No,
hold on here 1 second. Now. This is from 2011, came out. Let's see here. Oh, man. What happened? Anyway, I'm getting the one synopsis I found. I can't find it. Hold on, Matt. It's good podcasting here. They just compare him to Scott Turow and John Grisham. That's not helpful. It's a very short book. It's like 200 pages. Here we go. Fabrizio Colonini is recently retired. He's a quiet, unassuming man with no indications that he's capable of hurting anyone. And yet he brutally murders a prominent industrialist in one of Berlin's most exclusive hotels. Colonini ends up in the charge of Kasper Linden, a rookie defense lawyer eager to launch his career with a not guilty verdict. Complications soon arise when Colonini admits to the murder but refuses to give his motive, much less speak to anyone. As Linden searches for clues, he discovers a personal connection to the victim and unearths a terrible truth at the heart of Germany's legal system that stretches back to World War II. But how much is he willing to sacrifice to expose the truth? That sounds better.
Sounds good.
The Colonini case.
Okay.
All right, Matt, next book.
All right. I got, let's see. How many do you have?
I have 5.
Okay. That's not bad. I have 7 okay. In addition to the Grisham. So plenty to choose from. Yeah. All right. My first one is actually another guy who was a lawyer. I think people have heard of him. I hadn't read him, but Richard North Patterson.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah. Let's see. This is The Final Judgment. A young man is brutally murdered. His distraught girlfriend is the prime suspect. Her aunt, Carolyn Masters, about to take up a top job at the U.S. Court of Appeals, decides to defend the young woman in the murder trial. But this will be Carolyn's first contact with her family in almost 20 years. And as she prepares the case and goes through the trial, long forgotten secrets resurface.
Ooh.
You know, so like a little family drama, high stakes murder trial, judges.
Judges are key. And I think judges are a key part in legal thrillers.
Yeah. Well, and, you know,
they're oftentimes like crooked, right?
Yeah. 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 So I thought that was a good, juicy legal courtroom drama.
Let me pull up my next synopsis here. Hold on 1 second. This is another one that I came across. This one I think sounds fantastic. Hold on, Matt. This is another one I found on my Goodreads, perusing my old TBR. And that would be The Last Days of Night by Graham Moore. Have you heard of this author? Have you heard of this
book? It came up in mine.
It did it really?
Yeah.
All right. Let me just.
Oh, actually, no. I have a different Graham Moore to nominate.
Okay. Interesting. So,
yeah.
Okay, New York, 1888. Gas lamps still flicker in the city streets, but the miracle of electric light is in its infancy. The person who controls the means to turn night into day will make history and a vast fortune. A young, untested lawyer named Paul Kravath, fresh out of Columbia Law School, takes a case that seems impossible to win. Paul's client, George Westinghouse, has been sued by Thomas Edison over a $1 billion question. Who invented the light bulb and holds the right to power the country? Doesn't that sound good?
Hey, I think it
looks like Tesla's in there, an opera singer, a little bit of a historical legal thriller. Washington Post and the Philadelphia Inquirer named it one of the best books of the year. Came out in 2016. Sounds pretty good, actually. I'd never heard of the book before, and I thought that actually it's a editor's pick and best mystery thriller and suspense. So there you go. The Last Days of Night by Graham Moore. What's your Graham Moore?
Let me see. This one's called The Holdout.
The Holdout
by Graham Moore.
Okay.
Let me see. The most sensational case of the decade. 15-year-old Jessica Silver, heiress to a $1 billion real estate fortune, vanishes on her way home from school. Her teacher is the prime suspect after an illicit text message are discovered between them, and Jessica's blood is found in the car. The subsequent trial taps straight into America, blah, blah, blah. Subsequent trial is lurid in a famous tabloid case. It's an open and shut case for the prosecution, and a quick conviction seems all but guaranteed until Maya Seal, a young woman on the jury, convinced of Knox's innocence, persuades the rest of the jurors to return a verdict of not guilty. Flash forward 10 years, True to Crime docuseries reassembles the jurors with a particular focus on Maya, now a defense attorney herself. When one of the jurors is found dead in Maya's hotel room, all evidence points to her as a killer. We go from there. I like that.
I do. It's like an
old case comes back to haunt a juror who's now a lawyer. Pretty good.
Very good. My last one is based off a true story. Apparently it's a classic sort of in the genre. I'd never heard of it. It's called Compulsion by Meyer Levin. It's kind of loosely based off the Leopold and what's that murder case from like the 1920s?
Leopold and Loeb.
Yeah, so this is two different, kind of doesn't use those names exactly. Jude Steiner and Artie Strauss have it all, wealth, intelligence, and the world at their feet as part of the elite upper crust Jewish community of 1920 Chicago. Artie is handsome, yada yada. It's sort of, yeah, kind of. If you know anything about that case, I was kind of reading up a little bit about it. This book kind of is a fictionalized account, but I think probably pretty close to the kind of like events that actually happened. Los Angeles Times, in the review at the time, called Levin the most significant Jewish writer of his times. You can get a new, there's a, interestingly enough, a new edition was published in 2015 with a foreword by Marsha Clark from the O.J. Simpson trial.
Hey.
Publishers Weekly says it holds up as a landmark legal thriller. It never heard of the book and know a little bit about the actual case, and it sounds actually fantastic. So I was pretty happy with kind of finding off maybe not the what you would think of as sort of the go-to legal thrillers, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Good selection.
Okay. Matt, finish this off here.
All right, I have a bunch more.
Okay.
Speaking of Marsha Clark, though, do you know she writes legal thrillers?
I did know that.
Okay, well, I'm going to nominate the first one in the Rachel Knight series. It's called Guilt by Association.
Guilt by Association.
Okay. I'm not going to read through the description. It's by Marsha Clark from the O.J. Simpson trial. It involves a Los Angeles DA who is tenacious, wisecracking, and fiercely intelligent.
It's her, probably.
I mean, you know what? I actually, it seems like Karen, our patron Karen, actually really likes him.
Oh, really?
So okay. I'll throw it on there on her recommendation. Let's see. I got some other ones that I'd never heard of that sound good. This one is called The Jezebel Remedy by, and be careful here, Martin Clark, who is not Marsha Clark. It's just a coincidence that the name sounds so similar.
Okay.
Let's see. Lisa and Joe Stone, married for 20 years and partners in their small law firm in Henry County, Virginia, handle less than glamorous cases, domestic disputes, personal injury settlements, all that stuff. When Letty dies in a freakish fire, the Stones think it's certainly possible that she was cooking meth in her trailer. But details soon emerge that lead them to question how accidental her demise actually was, and settling her peculiar estate becomes endlessly complicated. Before long, the Stones find themselves entangled in a corporate conspiracy that will require all their legal skills, not to mention difficult ethical choices for them to survive. There's more stuff too, but I guess that's the gist of that one.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Let's see. The next one. This one sounds really good. It's number 4 in a series, but I don't know. This one stuck out to me. It's called 13 by Steve Cavanaugh. The tagline is, the serial killer isn't on trial, he's on the jury. It's the murder of the century, and Joshua Kane is killed to get the best seat in the house and to be sure the wrong man goes down for the crime, because this time the killer isn't on trial. He's on the jury.
That sounds fantastic.
Right? Serial killer works his way onto the jury.
How's that work? And
murders. I don't know. So
sounds like a John Cusack movie, which I think he does. I can't remember that title.
The Runaway Jury. It's based on a Grisham novel. Yeah. That would have been a perfect nomination for this. That's
Let's add it.
Actually.
Let's add it. Runaway Jury.
Runaway Jury?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, while we're just throwing stuff on there, Lincoln Lawyer.
Okay.
The first one. Those are fun. I listened to all six on audio last year. So they're fun. And if people want to read them, I'll gladly read them again. One more. I was told this is not a legal thriller, but I'd always seen these at the bookstores. You might recognize them, Peter. The covers look kind of cool. I always thought they were kind of mystery novels, but it turns out they're courtroom comedy / dramas.
Interesting. That's not a combination I think I've heard before.
Yeah. Have you heard of John Mortimer, the Rumpole series? Rumpole. Yeah. If you Google it real quick, you'll see the covers. They look familiar. I was assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That.
Okay.
That guy. So.
Interesting.
The first one in the series is called Rumpole of the Bailey.
It almost looks like a little like P.G. Woodhouse type.
Right? Yeah. So let's see. It's six short stories. Horace Rumpole, irreverent. Iconoclastic Clary Swilling, poetry spouting barrister of law, is among the most beloved characters of English crime literature. He's not a particularly gifted attorney, nor is he particularly fond of the law. Why courts, if it comes to that? But he'd rather be swinging at a case than bowing to his wife, Hilda, she who must be obeyed. Anyway, sounds like a funny British type thing. So we'll throw that on there too.
That looks, I might add that too. I've never heard of it, and it looks kind of very intriguing, very enjoyable. I'm assuming he's British.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a barrister, and the guy on the covers that I've seen is wearing one of those British wigs.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why they wear wigs like that.
So I think that is around 15 titles that I will post over on our Patreon. Our Patreons in the comments can vote for their top three, top four, and we assign points to that and go from there. So I think
tally up the points. Everyone gets an equal vote. It's pretty fun, I think.
You know, we do an episode on the book that we choose. Do you have a sense of where we might be leaning towards just from all the titles that we have named here?
I'm curious what you guys, the patrons, want to do. If it's looking like it's going to go to a Grisham, I'll probably throw in my vote and swing it that way, frankly. But any of these, like the serial killer on the jury one, both of the Graham Moore ones, brought up are good. I'm curious kind of what people want to do. And actually, no, I'm up for whatever.
Yeah, I don't know the pull that Grisham has. I don't know if he still has that strong following with her. And that would be an interesting decision over there. Sometimes we have very close votes and kind of.
Sometimes there's a runaway winner. So, it never goes the way I think it will either.
Yeah, I don't think we've had the sort of leader, quote unquote, win.
The last time with the murder mystery, I was sure it was going to be Agatha Christie, but I didn't take into account everybody. Robin, Karen, Thad had already read the Agatha Christie we nominated. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I've been happy with all the books we voted on. It's a fun process.
Red, yes. Fair. Slow Horses. What's the
Lions of Lucerne?
Lions of Lucerne.
And Cabinet of Curiosities. So this will be legal. Oh, and Keith, we got a new patron, Keith.
Keith.
Let us know what you think.
Yes.
And then
you get my library reports every month there, Keith. Good list of books. Let's switch over to our September nominations, Matt.
All right.
Where, you know, you messed with my system.
I just told you
you seem like you have your own system in place. Let me pull that list up. Okay. I only have 3 books to nominate.
Okay.
One of the books I believe I have nominated before. One of the books is been recommended to us from a friend of the show, Sam Ernst. Okay. And then one of them is, I haven't read it. I've read the author. I think the author is fantastic. And it's a book that I really want to read. So I have strong kind of wanting to read all 3 of these books. So I do have, sometimes I nominate books that I'm, you know, think you would like more, just kind of want to put out the title, but all 3 of these books, I will be very happy if we select.
Okay, good. That's what I meant by bring the heat.
Yeah.
If I ever say that again, that's what that means.
I didn't know what I thought you were like. I was thinking, like, should I do like John Steinbeck and Mark Twain? I thought you were like bring out the heavy hitters or something like that.
No, I'll tell you what I'm up to afterwards. But
let's see here. I'm going to pull up all of the books I have here as I do this so I can go from 1 to 1. Do you want me to start off, Matt?
Let me go.
Okay.
All right. One of the things that kind of bugged me, and the many things that kind of bugged me about Homo Deus.
Yes.
You know, that book we're in?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a little picture of a medieval painting of death. It was from the Black Plague, and somebody painted death like carrying people away on a cart and buggy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a little snotty, little like medieval people believed that death was a man with a scythe, but we, you know, scientifically minded people know better. And I remember thinking, like, they personified death in art. It doesn't mean they literally believe, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's not, didn't maybe literally believe in the guy. I don't think people were that dumb back then. I don't think we're that smart right now. It got me thinking, a lot of this art and ancient art going way back into history, all the way up through medieval times to now, there's a certain way of looking at all that stuff. It's about the evolution of human consciousness, and it's kind of personifying that process. It's a mistake to look at things literally and like, oh, they believed, you know, the paintings of like half god, half fish, or the Sphinx. They used to think that, you know, the gods were half lion with snake tail, and weren't they idiots? It's more of a, they personify certain processes through art, and there's more to it than that. So it's certainly, it's more about the history of consciousness.
I can see this book. Need to bring the heat. Continue.
Well, no. So this book, it's called The Origin of Consciousness in the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind by Julian Jaynes.
I'm just going to say right now, we're not picking this book.
Wow. So it is, let me see, 470 pages. It's a big deal when it came out. I'm not sure. It's a controversial subject. It basically says that up until a couple thousand years ago, human beings didn't have the consciousness that we have now. Back before then, it was more of like a group consciousness, and the voice, like we hear voices in our head, like our thinking voice that tells us to do things like, I want to do that. I want some Cheerios. I want that. We know, well, we think that's us talking to ourselves. We kind of know that that's just ourselves talking to ourselves. Jaynes's theory, basically, as I understand it, is up until a couple thousand years ago, they thought that was the God speaking to them. They didn't realize it as an internal voice. And he kind of points to the Iliad. If you read the Iliad, Achilles and the other characters don't have independent internal motivations. It's, you know, and Mars made Achilles angry or what have you, right? And so his theory is that's kind of the break. The bicameral mind springs out of that.
I think,
and in the Odyssey, you're in Odysseus's head more, and he's guided by the gods, but it's kind of the Iliad and the Odyssey are kind of the break between that process.
Okay.
Yeah. History of Human Consciousness, Peter.
Definitely a very interesting subject. It sounds like a very interesting book. I don't know if we should add that to be book 13 to our TBR, but I didn't think we'd add some of the books we've had. Like, what was it, last month, 2 months ago? I was like, the book of, what was the title? The Book of David? Not the Book of David.
King David Report.
The King David Report. I helped push that through onto our TBR, and you were shocked. So
you really want? I didn't.
By the end of, you know, the next 15 minutes, I might change my mind, say The Origin of Consciousness and The Bilateral Mind, whatever the title of that book was. And it's probably like $150 on Amazon. Can't find it anywhere else. No comment. Might be our September nomination. Okay, Matt. My first nomination is, I think I've nominated this, I'm pretty sure, it is The Tartar Steppe by Dino Buzzetti. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that. I'm probably pronouncing that terribly. Often likened to Kafka's The Castle, The Tartar Steppe is both a scathing critique of military life and a meditation on the human thirst for glory. It tells the tells of young Giovanni Drogo, who is posted to a distant fort overlooking the vast Tartar Steppe. Although not intending to stay, Giovanni suddenly finds that years have passed, as almost without his noticing, he has come to share the others' wait for a foreign invasion that never happens. Over time, the fort is downgraded and Giovanni's ambitions fade until the day the enemy begins massing on the desolate steppe. I think this sounds fantastic. It's been on my TBR for a very long time. I had a friend, John, read it, gave it 5 stars. So, you know, kind of, you know, Peter's literary European side, this would scratch that itch. I think you would like this book a lot, Matt.
Sounds good. What's the guy's name again?
Dino, D-I-N-O, Buzzati, B-U-Z-Z-A-T-I.
Okay. Italian film? Italian?
I don't know off the top. Actually, a new edition came out from New York Review of Books called The Stronghold. Same book, different title. I'm not entirely sure why. I don't know how you get The Stronghold from The Tartar Steppe, but same book. Anyway.
Okay. Okay. All right. And you have mentioned it before.
I feel like I have.
Yeah, because it's about everything you just said it was. It's not like tartar sauce. The Tartars are a group of people.
Step, S-T-E-P-P, like a
geological
reference.
It's more serious.
Italian, yep.
Okay.
Born in 1906, died in 1972.
Hey. You know, Dean Martin's nickname was Dino.
Okay. That's neat.
He was Italian, too.
I think that's a strong nomination, man.
That's a good nomination.
Let's bring the heat. Give me your next. I don't really know the theme yet, but I'm curious. Second nomination.
All right. Hey, you know about the Old West?
I've heard of
Cowboys.
It.
You know, the frontier.
Yep.
Colonialism. The colonial gaze.
Yep.
That's G-A-Z-E. It's called...
Okay.
So this nomination, this is called The Fatal Environment by Richard Slotkin. The Myth of the Frontier in the Age of Industrialization, 1800 to 1890.
Did you say The Fatal Environment?
The Fatal Environment. Okay. So it's number two in a series of three. The first in the series is called Regeneration Through Violence. And that's about 1600 up until, you know, 18 something. And that Regeneration Through Violence is about the early colonial settlers in America. And Slotkin goes deep into their literature and kind of describes how they saw the world and they saw their purpose. They were kind of biblically inspired people who thought they were doing God's work in their fight against the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And it just got very, it's how they justify, it was a very bloody time and it's how they justified their violence and, you know, redeemed themselves through violence and justify, you know, kind of their conquest. This one that I'm nominating is about the Old West as it existed and the perception of the Old West that kind of became mythologized in pulp novels, and how that fed on the mythology as the collective imagination of the country in industrialized America, particularly back east. It's a fascinating subject. It's always been kind of something I've been interested in since I had to do a paper on it in college. It's 532 pages before the notes start. Very interesting stuff. It's kind of, you know, did you know a lot of the stuff that we associate with cowboys? They weren't actually like that at first. They wore a lot of denim jeans and they're kind of, but they started reading the dime store novels about cowboy adventures started coming out. And then the actual ranch hand cowboys started imitating what they'd read about in the dime store novels.
Oh.
And it kind of weirdly became the actual way cowboys behaved, but not naturally, because they read about themselves in dime store novels and started mimicking that.
That's fascinating.
Right? So it's like that sort of thing.
Is your theme college books that you bought in college?
Not quite.
Okay.
Quite.
So I'm just kind of curious here. Because I feel like you've dominated two academic books.
They're kind of pop academic, yeah. They're academic, but they're interesting. They're not dry and impenetrable.
Oh, yeah. Next book I'm nominating is The Debut. I've read one of this author's, I think it's most recent book. This is a book Sam Ernst, I believe, told us is very good. And that would be HHHH by Laurent Binet, French author.
He wrote that other one you read, right?
Civilizations, I believe, is the title of that. That's an imagining of civilizations about if the kind of Aztecs or the like kind of South America tribes actually stopped sort of the European like colonization of the lands and actually went across to Europe and conquered Europe. And sort of it, the book kind of makes it make sense sort of in a alternate history. But that's not the book I'm nominating, Matt. This is a kind of about, it sort of sounds like a little meta in a weird way, about the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, kind of the brutal leader of Nazi. I don't know exactly if he was part of the, he must've been part of the SS, but I'm not super familiar with like his role exactly. Obviously
you hear get killed early. Yeah.
And it's kind of his assassination, and it kind of follows kind of the assassins, and it seemed like almost like the writing of the book in a way, from one of the synopsis I got. Okay, so yeah, HHHH is like Himmler's brain is called Heydrich. I don't know, that seems, can't make heads or tails of that.
Well, he would have been Himmler's right-hand man, right? Is that what that means?
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. it's been called at once thrilling and intellectually engrossing. Yeah, I've been curious about this book. Probably didn't do a great job of kind of selling it, but we have gotten it recommended to us from outside sources, so that usually helps in the voting process.
I've been curious about this, you know, and especially because I was in 4-H. Did you know that when I was a kid?
I think this is a different 4-H, but yes.
I did woodworking.
I was never, I was never in 4-H.
Yeah, I know. What did you do? You didn't watch movies.
I did watch movies, though. That's the weird thing. Anyway, when do you start 4-H? That's like junior high, like 12?
Yeah, grade, like later, fourth, fifth grade, later grade school, junior high.
How long does it last?
You go all the way through high school. I was in it for a couple of years.
Where are the H's?
Hands, helping, heart. Another one I forgot. It's been a long time.
Not like, I thought it was all about horses.
Horses might be the fourth. No, I did bucket calf, actually. We had raised little cows, and then you go to an arena and kind of show them.
It's kind of amazing we became friends.
What, because I'm a hick?
Like, we just had, you have like cool stories that I had, like, I don't know how to relate to what you just said.
Being in 4-H, I guess I won't argue with you, but the majority of the public might dispute the fact that 4-H is cool.
I don't know. It kind of seems cool. Maybe.
Bucket calf was kind of fun.
I don't even know what you meant. You know, but is that like a small calf?
You feed it out of a bucket. You buy a little calf. You get a little calf and then you feed it out of a bucket.
I thought it was like a miniature calf. Like a bucket was just like, you know, of the farm terms are just like kind of cool. You don't know exactly what you mean, but it's like,
like a type of cattle.
I got a bullet horse and I got a grenade cow. And you're like, oh, what is that? That sounds cool. Just made those up. Those aren't real things.
I'm with you.
Bullet horse might be a real thing.
Bullet horse. My brother's bucket calf, his name was Bullet.
No kidding.
True story. Bullet.
Okay.
My cow is named Boss.
Oh, I think if kind of go up to a vote, better name, I think I'd vote for yours. It's pretty good.
Oh.
I think Bullet's a good cow name.
I'll tell Jeff that.
Yeah, tell him that. Tell him he lost that vote.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll be heartbroken. HHH. I don't know what's happening.
All right, good nomination.
It's not even hot up here in the attic tonight. It's not even hot. Can't even complain about that. Is this your last nomination? Or
I got two more.
I don't even know what you're just right. Books that you have to get rid of?
No, I'm not getting rid of these. For real, I would never get rid of these. I'm going to read them one of these days. All right. So you know how Otto von Bismarck united Germany?
What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Turn it from a bunch of principalities into what we know as Germany now. Abraham Lincoln did the same thing in the United States.
Okay.
You know the guy who did that to France? Earlier. But after the Hundred Years' War, most of France was, occupied.
Can I say a name? And this is the only name that popped in my head. And I have no historical context to this name. I'm just going to say this name. I might be off 2,000 years with this name.
Okay.
I don't actually want to say it because people are going to think my brain is tired. I don't have enough coffee in me. Charlemagne?
No. But that's a good, he's like maybe more progenitor. This is after Charlemagne.
That's a French guy. That's all I know.
This guy, no, he kind of, after the English were kicked out by Joan of Arc and everything, France was still kind of divided, reeling from the English occupation. There was kind of Burgundy, and I think the Bourbons owned the other part of France. I'm kind of hazy on the details. But France is divided, and the guy who kind of united France into what we know now was Louis the Eleventh. He was known as the Spider King. This book is The Universal Spider. Wow. Louis the Eleventh, biography by Paul Murray Kendall. 1423.
What's happening with these nominations?
1423 is when Louis the Eleventh was
born. Google this. I got to do all this research on just how to spell the author's names. Continue, Matt.
He was king from 1461 to 1483. He was a weird, ugly-looking guy, but he was a brilliant strategist.
You said this is... Who's this by?
Paul Murray Kendall. It's called The Universal Spider.
None of these books, listener, is like under $30. Okay.
Ugly, fat, paranoid, and ruthless, Louis's early life was turbulent and filled with intrigue. I guess his dad hated him, didn't really like him. But he's next in line to the throne. Kind of his childhood gave him a unique perspective on the world. He kind of wasn't like an evil guy. It didn't turn him into an evil guy. It just kind of made him a good strategist. And it nobody saw it coming, but when he actually took power, he did pretty well.
Okay.
He wound up uniting France, won some wars. A lot of diplomatic Machiavellian trickery, and him king of France. Universal Spider. You know he's called the Spider because he's like in the middle weaving his webs.
It's a great nickname.
The Universal Spider.
Nonfiction, just generic. Is that what we're doing? Is that your that was it?
They're all interesting books.
That was your theme?
No.
Had to be more specific than that.
I still got one more. You still got one more.
What I have to work with here. I don't even have the last book is an author I think is fantastic. Recently passed away. Kind of interesting story. Wrote three pretty well-received books in the 70s and then had a motorcycle accident that kind of left him paralyzed or partially paralyzed and then kind of came back later and wrote a few more books before he sadly passed away recently. And that's David Rhodes. And the book I'm nominating is Rock Island Line. Let me read you a little bit about this. David Rhodes also wrote a book called Jewel Weed, which is kind of this happened before Jewel Weed. I love Jewel Weed. I didn't, but this book kind of gives the backstory to some of the characters in that book. Raised in an idyllic Iowa town, young July Montgomery is rocked by the tragic death of his parents. Fleeing to Philadelphia, he fashions a ghostly existence in an underground train station. When a young woman appears to free him from his malaise, they return together to Iowa, where the novel soars to its heart-rending climax. First published to enormous acclaim in 1975. The main selling point on this is Rhodes is just a fantastic, fantastic writer. Can't stress that enough. He's just a brilliant, like a heartfelt, but not a sappy or sentimental way. Or if it's sentimental, it's from a good place and it's well earned. Just, I don't know. I just think he's one of those authors. His style and his prose just fits what I love about writing so much that I recently bought this from a used bookstore a couple months ago, and it's just been sitting on my shelf. I don't think it's an author you've read or know much about. I don't think it's an author a lot of people have a lot of familiarity with, but he's one of my favorites. So that would be Rock Island Line by David Rhodes.
Remember you recommended Jewel Weed to me pretty heavily fantastic. Back in the day.
And he wrote another one called Driftless, which I thought was good, but not as good as Jewel Weed. Driftless is kind of, I believe, more recent. I think it was 2009. I could be wrong about that. But, yeah. And then David Rhodes just had another book that came out within the last couple of years, and I believe he passed away last year. He was tied. I believe he had some connection to the Iowa Writers Workshop part of his life. But, that's my last nomination.
Yeah. Those are good. It's good nominations.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Like all of them.
Your last nomination, Matt.
All right. Heard of Frederick the Great.
Okay.
King of Prussia.
Okay.
One of the most enigmatic rulers of all time. Frederick the Great was forever torn between the unruly kingdom he had inherited and the life of the intellectual contemplation he craved. Flutist, maybe they mean flautist.
Flutist.
Flutist, poet, friend of Voltaire, military commander, and autocrat. He has become, since his death, the an emblem for all that is both good and evil in modern Germany.
Mm.
Book is called Frederick the Great, The Magnificent Enigma. If you read it too fast, it looks like enema, but it's Enigma by Robert Asprey. And on the cover, it's got Frederick the Great reading sheet music, playing a flute.
What a cool guy.
Pretty cool cover.
Between that and you and 4-H, I think we've got the cool cover.
Cool, yeah, cool cover. Book. This is 634 pages before...
What is your theme? Tell me your theme right now.
Anyway, did you know Frederick the Great, like the army back in that time, it was so miserable to be in the Prussian army. They wouldn't march at night because they didn't want, like, they could only march at night. So that
Matt, I'm losing you. You know, on purpose.
Isn't that an interesting tidbit, though?
Oh, I lost you there for a second.
I think it's an interesting factoid. Anyway, okay, I'm
done. I'm not joking. That wasn't a bit. I don't know if you went all blurry on me.
Really?
Yeah. If then a thing came up on my screen that says the internet is unstable.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully the audience got to hear my tidbit.
Okay.
It's good to know you're not doing heat stroke either. It's like my computer didn't get blurry. I was like, you're
no. I'm a little bit worried that we might have to wrap this up soon, though.
Okay. All right. So my theme was I felt guilty about making you read a whole book about the Kansas City Chiefs. And so I was like, you know, I don't want to throw it. So I'm going to get four big old nonfiction history books.
Okay.
I'd be happy to read, but I don't think you're going to go for. But if you did, great. But, you know, whatever.
Here's the thing. On the surface, last week's episode, we had a great interview with Rustin Dodd, co-author of the book Kingdom Quarterback. On the surface, Kansas City Chiefs book, I'm a big Broncos fan, wouldn't be my thing. I like history. I like football. So really, you know, if it's not my, let's put it this way. If it was about John Elway, I'd be like, you know, for me, the selling point of that book was like the history of Kansas City. It's kind of, I didn't know anything about it. And it's fascinating. They did a great job. So, don't feel bad.
All right.
Or feel bad. I don't know. It's up to you. Maybe I should lean into that. Maybe I should get a couple, artsy European books.
Well, that's why I said bring the heat.
Okay.
Because I felt a little guilty, and maybe I'm excited about October and spooky. Kind of the horror books we're going to do.
Never good with the spooky books, nominating those. I kind of struggle with those sometimes. Well,
so just keep this month in mind. I'm kind of, you know.
So, with that in mind, which one of the three that I nominated tickles your fancy?
So I like all three. I really like the Tartar Steppe and 4-H.
I want to repeat. I don't think you'd say it 4-H, but okay.
It's 4-H's though.
It's true. Third one is what not you, capitalized.
The Tartar Steppe sounds pretty cool.
I think the Tartar Steppe is kind of the way to go.
Yeah. But no, I could do H-H-H-H-H-H too.
It's true. I could do that too. We're not adding two. We can't.
No, no, no. But one of those two.
It's up to you.
How long are each of them?
I think they're both pretty short. Okay. The Tartar Steppe. I'm going to look at, I don't know why it's called the Stronghold as well. I don't exactly know why that is. I'm going to look at that's probably the 216 pages for the Tartar Steppe, and HHH, I would guess, is under 300 pages. Pulling that up right now. And I think it might have some weird formatting too.
Something in me is telling me the HHHHH one.
By Lorne Binet?
Yeah.
That's in that right? It's like 336 pages.
You could veto and do the Tartar Steppe, but I think I trust Sam's taste in books too.
How do I do that too? Maybe we bring Sam on the podcast.
Yeah.
Let's do HHHH by Lorne.
And you, okay.
What?
You said it's the New York Review, the Tartar Steppe, the NYRB book.
So, yeah, the Tartar Steppe, I believe that's the title for the longest time. I think it's this year, the New York Review books, if you're not familiar, they have a kind of imprint, great, you know, kind of publishing where they kind of go back and kind of publish maybe not forgotten classics in Europe and kind of all over the world, but sort of maybe not at the forefront of like American readers, let's put it that way. And they released this with a new translation, but they changed the title to The Stronghold. Don't know why. They might have a reason for that. I don't know what that reason is. I can look it up for you right now, but yeah, the Stronghold and the Tartar Steppe by is the same book.
All right.
As far as I'm aware.
I'll keep my eye out for it. If I see it, I'll snatch it up. Because that's good. That sounds good too.
I think at some point we should do that book.
We should. If Sam had recommended the Tartar Step, we'd be going with the Tartar Step.
It's true. But we're going with HHHH. Kind of. This might be a bit of a downer book for you. I know you're not a big fan of the downer books. There's not going to be a lot of humor in this book.
HHHH? They're assassinating a Nazi. I think it'll be fun. Oh,
that's true. Right? But I don't think it's, you know, this isn't Inglourious Bastards with the humor. I think this maybe is serious. Who knows? I might be completely wrong.
I can handle serious stuff.
All right, all right.
Speaking of, the one book you did forget in our TBR?
Yes.
I finally got at the library. Small Mercies. Dennis Lehane. It was our unofficial.
Oh, gosh.
So, what?
Is that really on our TBR?
I got it from the library. I'm going to read it.
Okay. Let me add it. So somehow I just added another book. Okay, so that gets us up to about 14 books. Sounds
cool.
Good.
Cool.
All right. HHHH. Hopefully Sam is happy with that. He'll be like, you guys can get that into the next year. We will see, Sam. We will see.
Yeah. Or he'll be like, I already read it. You guys should have gone with the other one.
So yeah, fun episode tonight, Matt. Kind of combined two things, two birds with one stone. If you're curious, we probably won't talk about these thriller books again on our normal channel. That'll all be over on our Patreon. Like I said, it's not a huge commitment. We like to interact with people over there. It's a fun time. You could even at some point join our fantasy football league. You just have to ask. That just got started up. Matt has a crazy coin system. It's already driving my brother crazy.
You don't like it?
He's asking all these questions. He goes, why didn't I get credit for my defensive touchdowns? I go, I don't know what's going on.
You shouldn't.
Didn't.
We'll talk about that. I'll look into it.
The politics of the system. My brother's having long conversations with Sam Ernst.
Really?
Yes.
As you're going behind my...
They're not going behind your back, Matt.
We'll talk about it off air. I'll fix it if there's a problem.
No. There's a lot. No, I think my brother, he would have won by 1 point.
You should get points for defensive touchdowns, though.
Doesn't.
Huh?
For some reason, he didn't.
Well, let me look.
Yeah. it's a joy to watch Matt run this league. The scoring system was, yeah. Anyway, I don't know how much our fantasy football and book material overlap, but it's fun.
It's fun to do.
So
every patrons all get an equal vote when we're doing their legal thriller series.
We got bookmarks. We got coffee cups. We got some t-shirts. Sometimes, and we have a crazy TBR. Where are we coming up for the listener?
The Sun.
Sun, okay.
Probably Jaber Crow.
Jaber Crow. And probably after that, I want to get finished Burr up too, so we get that. And I want to get done with The Once in the Future King.
Yeah,
sounds good. I want to add another long book. Life and Fate, that's going to be going to 2024. Let's not fool ourselves.
We might be like waiting for Godot. We might never get to it. We'll just talk about it. We'll see. Do you know, a year ago, I was looking up what we did last September, and that's when we added Master Margarita.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So we'll see where we're at.
Also a recommendation by Sam Ernst.
Yep.
So maybe Sam's, you know, he might be honored that we're picking his books, but...
we have to actually read them.
Yeah, we have to actually read his recommendations. Matt, any final thoughts?
No,
when are you going to be done with the book move?
Hopefully soon. I'm getting some pressure from inside the house. So
if you have some books that you think, you know what, I think Peter would like those books, send me a picture, drop them by my house, take a look at them. I'll tell my wife I haven't bought a book in a while. These are Matt's. He had to get rid of them. I keep taking care of them for now.
Okay.
I'll I'll put them up in the attic. You won't see them.
Okay. Or you can sneak them into the house. All right, I got a little stack going.
All right, I like that. And I'll get you a stack of books to send to you.
Okay.
And you can put those in like your garage, something like that.
I have some books in the trunk of my car. I'm too afraid to bring in because it would look bad. Me bringing in more books in the middle of this move, so they're just in my trunk. So
I think that's a perfect way to end the episode. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.